Hey guys, welcome to the Safe Space Podcast. You're with your host Emma and
Hester.
Today we're going to be talking about gay Hollywood.
Hollywood!
Let's dive straight in.
Emma, did you know that Hollywood intentionally taught us to hate and fear gay people?
No.
It did. Oh. Since movies were invented, they have shaped our culture.
They have indeed.
And we can see that today with this summer's Barbie Mania.
Took over the world.
Took over the bloody world. So back in the day, movies were the most encompassing form of media that you could possibly have. It's unimaginable. Music, theatre, photography, editing. Crazy. And so people were able to portray so much more about the human experience.
Interesting.
And in the early days of cinema, the artist took this medium and ran with it.
Nice. Seems very liberal back then.
Well, there were liberal elements to life, you know. So, at the time, a lot of art and literature and entertainment was filled with gay people and early gay culture.
Incredible.
And film was set to do the same.
Nice.
So it was experimental, and it was overwhelmingly gay, darling.
Let's take a look. Well, that makes sense, actually, Hess, because what I read recently was the very first ever Academy Awards in, I think it was 1929. The best picture was won by Wings, and it included a gay kiss.
Holy gashmoly.
So the story goes that there were these two men fighting for this one woman. Classic. But within that, they actually started to fall for each other. And throughout the whole movie, they just said they were friends. But then at the end, there's like a climactic kiss.
You gotta have a look.
You gotta see this kiss. Come on.
Gabby, come on. Come on. Just a couple of bros. But they knew. They must have known.
Yeah.
And as you can see in that film, gay characters are a part of movies the same way they're a part of life, especially in show business. Even if these gay characters were portrayed as kind of amusing and kind of funny. Like, a lot of gay men were cast as, like, the sissy character.
Yeah, I read about this as well.
I'm telling you, if we could get the runs with this show that these dames get in their stockings, I'd be able to make the second payment on my kimono.
Here, Clarence, put that in the trunk. And don't wear it.
So, as you can see...
As I can see.
Gays were there, even if they were a bit caricatures.
Yeah.
But gay women were also portrayed.
Lesbians, formerly known as lesbians.
Yes, formerly known as lesbians. For instance, Marlene Dietrich in Morocco.
I've heard about her.
Where she wears a full suit and actually kisses a woman in a room full of people.
Of course.
So as you can see, she's kind of iconic.
Iconic.
I mean, she is iconic.
Waltzing.
But she's also, they also laugh at it, you know. Like, it's funny. It's something to be amused at. But it was represented, at least.
Yes.
And Marlene Dietrich was actually known to have affairs with men and women, was an incredibly popular actress in the gay scene in the Weimar Republic.
I know, she came from Germany, didn't she?
She did indeed.
Actually, Germany was a big influence on Hollywood at the very start. The Institute of Sexual Science, which our good friend Magnus Hirschfeld opened in Berlin, produced the first film that ever discussed homosexuality in 1919. It was called Different from the Others. And the film actually openly pleaded tolerance for what was termed at that time the third sex.
Amazing.
And Dr. Hirschfeld actually delivers a speech in the film.
What was happening in clubs in Berlin and in New York, in Harlem and in Paris was coming to the screen and it was testing the boundaries of society.
I love to see it.
And as these movies could be created en masse and take and be shown in any screen, in any town, in any part of the world, this was dangerous. for some people. Because the stories being told were inclusive of people whose voices had before been suppressed. So black people and gay people and women were seen and were heard. And that
was
political.
Yeah.
And a lot of people did not like it.
Enter
the church and state. The church and some people in office started to become concerned with this and decided that they wanted to censor this new form of very liberal, very experimental media because it was going to, you know, shake too many feathers, right? So this guy, William Hayes, devised something called the Hayes Code.
Heard of the Hayes Code, not a fan of it.
Not a fan of it. Well, exactly. It was the idea was to censor dynamics on screen. And it was originally not taken too seriously.
Right.
So then the church were like, oh God, we've really got to go hard on this. So they formed a group called the Legion of Decency.
They sound like a fun bunch.
Yeah, I think I'd probably be able to get in there. Who came up with a plan to pressure Hollywood producers by saying, if you don't do what we say, we're going to boycott your films and we're going to get all our congregations to boycott them too.
Oh, not what you want for the money money.
For the big money money. So the Hollywood producers are like, shit. God damn, we've got to take all the gays out. And everything else, right? So there were strict guidelines on the studios. They couldn't show sex, drugs, nudity, scenes of white slavery.
What?
Well, I think that was because they didn't want white people to see white slaves because then they'd associate that with black slaves and they would formulate like alliances and bring down the state.
Right.
It's an odd one, but
yeah.
Childbirth.
Oh, heavens above.
And sexual relationships between different races. And one of the guidelines was also strict instruction to not promote homosexuality.
Great.
So scenes like this were taken out of films.
That was a beautiful piece of footage.
Wasn't it? Isn't that amazing? Gone. Out of there. It was out of there. Couldn't see that. Too gay. So, as a result, gay and lesbian characters were either nowhere to be seen, or their characters became incredibly obscured in stories.
Right.
Gay characters were villainized or painted as
parody,
unattractive or cringeworthy.
Right.
And these guidelines lasted from 1934 to 1968, which is 34 years of film, right?
That's insane. You know what I really liked? Can I just say about that video of those people dance, like sort of swimming, is that the music and the rhythm and the pace, it's like eloquent and beautiful, and the connotations of gay people in it is just really sweet.
Exactly. And that couldn't be seen.
So it's like, so then the repainting of them, which you just said, is obviously going to then perpetuate that culture that they are villains, that laughable. Whereas if you'd have seen that, it can form a culture of acceptance.
Exactly. Well, this is it. And this Hayes Code actually severely warped generation after generations of view of homosexual people.
You can see that today.
Mm-hmm.
We're still fighting this code.
Isn't it? And also how homosexuals felt towards themselves.
Such a shame.
So, lesbians. Let's talk about lesbians.
We love talking about the lesbians.
Lesbians became the creep.
Oh, no.
So lesbians were being portrayed as creepy and conniving. For instance, in All About Eve.
Right.
Eve Harrington was one of the most iconic villains of the golden age of Hollywood. She was coded as a lesbian, and she was obsessed with Bette Davis's character. But she had this underlying aim of sabotaging and destroying her.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. What I find quite interesting about that is not just like, you know, the Hayes Code, you think it would have just cut them out, which was just like their intention, as if they didn't exist. But then they actually then became coded in it as villains, as something that was like used in storytelling to create this demeanor and attitude of this type of person. So they were still there.
Yeah, they were still there. I think people couldn't cut them out, you know, because they were such a big part of life. But they also became such a good tool to play with, like, make-believe and storytelling.
Interesting.
Secondly, you've got Mrs. Denvers in Hollywood's version of Rebecca. She plays the maid to the widowed husband, Maxim.
Okay.
And she's obsessed with Maxim's dead wife, Rebecca.
Right.
And she's showing the new wife around the house.
Yeah.
But she's obviously got a lot going on with this Rebecca girl.
Right.
So she's portrayed as a pretty much a general creep. Watch. Exhibit A.
This is where I keep all her clothes. You would like to see them, wouldn't you? Feel this.
So as you can see, weird.
Interesting.
So this kind of character appeared throughout the 30s and the 40s and the 50s.
That's so long.
I know. And it also, something that I'm pretty happy with, it also birthed the idea of the lesbian vampire.
Oh, you like all this, don't you?
Exactly. Because the vampire, she could have a sexual almost desire for the woman.
Yeah.
By disguising it as a desire for drinking her blood.
Interesting.
But she had to be shrouded in danger and fear in order to portray that.
Dammit. I'm doing a study of a young girl's head and shoulders. You won't object to removing your blouse, will you?
Why are you looking at me that way? Won't I do?
Yes, you'll do very well indeed. Do you like jewels, Lily?
Oh my God.
This is very old and very beautiful. I'll show it to you.
I think I'll pose tonight. I think I'll go if you don't mind. Please don't come any closer.
So that was a vampire. She was a vampire.
She was a vampire. Dracula's Daughter, that film's called.
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous. You can't tell in that if it's a gay filmmaker trying to play with the audience.
Interesting.
Or not. But however it is, the attraction between a woman and a woman is portrayed as some sort of, like, evil result or dangerous
and something
occurrence.
That the audience would watch that and feel like, fuck, like, no, don't go near her.
Exactly, exactly. And that perpetuated into the 1950s, where films did start to recognise homosexuality more, but only as something that needed to be feared or crushed within someone. So
classic.
In the 50s, masculinity was a huge theme. And erasing gayness and femininity became an objective in order to secure masculinity.
Yeah.
While women's homosexuality became attributed to sort of sickness and tragedy, just like here.
Experiences, Amy. Well, here's one for you. I'm leaving you.
I'd like to kill you.
You almost did. You're a sick girl, Amy. You better see a doctor.
So she needs to go and see a doctor because she's lesbian?
Basically, yeah. So she's gone off with another lady.
Right.
She's sort of fallen off with another lady and he's sort of really annoyed about it. And his response is, you're sick. And that was quite a theme throughout the 50s, if any homosexuality was perceived.
Really pulling on those conversion therapy vibes.
Yeah, well, that became really big in the 50s. I mean, in the 50s, you've got to think a lot of people came back from war.
Mm.
Maybe there's a lot of, like, clinging to something like masculinity.
Yeah,
because of
purpose.
Yeah, and there's all this trauma and there's men coming back to a world where they don't have as much as a purpose because the women have kind of done all the jobs without them and therefore masculinity becomes
it.
Exactly, and that means removing any
thing that threatens it.
Any masculinity in women and any femininity in men.
Interesting.
Gender roles. However, in Hollywood, there were many gay actors and writers.
There were.
Who drew from their personal experiences in order to write the scripts and the stories. For instance, in the hyper-macho movie Ben-Hur, which was written by a gay writer, Gore Vidal. Mm-hmm. Gore intentionally wrote the main characters as gay, but he only told one of the actors, and he didn't tell Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston is a really hyper-masculine guy, I think quite right-wing, conservative, and they were like, we can't tell Charlton that he's playing, that this is a sort of gay love affair.
Oh, God.
We'll just tell the other one.
Problematic in that.
Well, he's an actor.
Yeah.
You know.
But you should really know the role you're playing. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, but they couldn't know the role. I mean, he would have made a fuss about the role he was playing, do you know what I mean? Mm. It all had to be under wraps. No one, it could be gay, but you couldn't say it was gay.
Right.
So gay writers found little ways around this.
Right,
and you can see the gayness in these looks they give each other.
Okay. Shall I watch it?
I said I'd come back. I never thought you would. I'm so glad.
So, as you can see, there's a very strong connection between the two men.
Mm.
And Gore Vidal knew that that dynamic would make the film more interesting.
Yeah.
So he included it, but he hid it. He coded it. Yeah. Right?
Interesting.
This was the beginning of the gay in-joke of Hollywood.
So like the hiding in plain sight vibe.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Innuendos were used to communicate to gay audiences.
Love it.
As you can see here in Red River.
It's a good-looking gun you're about to use back there. Can I see it? Maybe you'd like to see mine. Nice, awful nice. You know, there are only two things more beautiful than a good gun. A Swiss watch or a woman from anywhere. You ever had a good Swiss watch? Go ahead, try it. Hey, that's very good.
Ever got a good gun? I mean, ever had a Swiss watch?
It's fantastic, isn't it? Because he knows. And the actor that, the guy who he asks for the gun off, is Monty Clift, who was a gay actor.
Right.
And he struggled with it, really struggled with it, and he ended up actually taking his own life eventually. But you can see that in the film, he knows what he's saying and why he's saying it. Like, there's so much sexual tension.
The pause.
The
beat,
pause. And the, also
the little
like,
nose.
Yeah, the whole, the only thing that's better than a gun is a Swiss watch and any woman from anywhere. Have you ever tried a Swiss watch? Do you know what I mean? It's just like anything to avoid that. Like,
yeah.
So these innuendos were concealed to straight audience. Straight audiences didn't see them. They'd not seen them in 20 years.
Yeah.
So they couldn't anymore.
Bringing up of the woman as well, kind of like as like a passing comment, but actually what's really interesting about that is the relationship between those two men then.
Exactly.
But the straight audience would have heard, well, he said, look, good looking woman, so it's fine.
Exactly, exactly. So these bits in the films would get through the censorship, would get through the League of Decency in censoring it. They wouldn't be able to cut it out. They wouldn't know it was there. But the gays knew.
The gays knew.
And these in-jokes were enjoyable for closeted audiences all over the world.
Yeah. You'd feel included. You'd feel like part of a secret code, wouldn't you? You'd feel like part of a secret mission.
Exactly.
And you'd see it and you'd be like, hell yeah.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
Now, this one is shameless.
Ain't there anyone here for love?
As you can see, Jane Crawford there is begging someone to play doubles with her.
Is that Joan Crawford?
Yeah, I think it's Joan Crawford. Yeah, that's Joan Crawford.
She was a...
I know. She's begging someone in that room to play doubles with her.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a group of gay men...
prancing around.
Blatantly. As soon as she asks, literally putting their asses in their face. I'm saying, no, honey, not here. And she knows it and they know it. There's nothing gayer than that.
No.
So,
interesting.
Obviously, these jokes were fantastic. There's a couple more that show this.
That's good. I'm going to level with you. We can't get married at all.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, I'm not a natural blonde.
Doesn't matter.
I smoke. I smoke all the time.
I don't care.
Well, I have a terrible past. For 3 years now, I've been living with a saxophone player.
I forgive you.
I can never have children.
We can adopt some.
But you don't understand, Osgood. I'm a man.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Do you consider the eating of oysters to be moral and the eating of snails to be immoral?
No, Master.
Of course not. It is all a matter of taste, isn't it?
Yes, Master.
And taste is not the same as appetite, and therefore not a question of morals, is it?
Oh my giddy aunt.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's rife. It's absolutely rife with the gay jokes. No wonder we're so bloody funny as gays.
No. I mean, to be fair, the gladiator scene was deleted.
Oh.
Some Like It Hot scene, that's how the movie ends, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as you can see, we started as the gays, you know, you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. We started to push the boundaries really far.
Mm-hmm.
And the industry was full of gay people.
Mm.
And resistance amongst producers started to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Also, television became really popular.
Mm-hmm.
And the League of Decency just did not have the time to go through all of the TV and all of the movies that were being produced.
Yeah.
The code was abandoned in the 1960s and officially abandoned in 1968.
Right.
And gay people could finally be acknowledged on screen.
Of known fact. No, sorry.
Excuse me.
Legitimately.
Yeah.
Rather than just coded.
Yeah, they weren't... It wasn't going to be taken out of the film. It wasn't going to compromise the film.
Interesting.
However, because homosexuality had been so hidden and so demonised for 34 years by that point, a lot of the stories told about gay people were through the lens of shame, through the lens of hatred and fear. So it had already infected...
Loads.
Yeah, the people's expectations of a gay lifestyle was bleak.
Yeah.
And at the time, also, gay was assumed to be a mental illness. And gay men did risk being attacked on the street.
Mm.
It wasn't uncommon. And so the stories were told through a lens of shame.
Don't you see? I can't stand to have you touch me. I can't stand to have you look at me. Oh, it's all my fault. I ruined your life and I ruined my own. I swear I didn't know it. I didn't mean it. Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty. I can't stand it anymore.
I looked at them. Was this what I was like? Oh, my God. Twisted faces. Outcasts. Lives lived in shadows, always prey to a million dangers. People don't realize what we go through. I was raised in a family that would not even admit that there was such a thing as a homosexual in this world. And here I was. And I couldn't do anything about it.
Internalized homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like told continually for decades and decades and decades that you're sick and ill and twisted. That when you do realise that about your sexuality, that's what you just hate yourself.
Mm.
And it makes you think, you know, all these trans people and LGBT people in general, how many of them take their own life? The statistic is horrific.
Yeah, and I mean, it was at that time, and I think, like, it's interesting that as soon as it became sort of legal to portray, to have gay people in films, it was used to portray a life of trauma and
no joy.
Sensationalize it.
Yeah.
Almost, like, to make money from it.
Oh,
which is kind of crazy, given the gay in-joke we were experiencing a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
To how it shifted to this, when maybe straight people got their hands on movies like this, you know what I mean?
Interesting. Terribly sad, really.
And at this time, the bury your gaze trope became accelerated. Have you ever heard that idea?
No, what's that?
Bury your gaze is like the way that films always killed off gay and trans characters.
Yeah, the classic, yeah.
So their lives would have a tragic end and they'd get killed off, often just as they'd opened themselves up to a sexual experience, just as they'd allowed their queerness to be seen. They'd die. Like Brokeback Mountain's a perfect example of this.
Yeah.
But it's still happening in some cases. But following the 60s, queer liberation started to be on the cards.
Yeah.
And this hit the silver screen. And so as gay people started to feel more liberated, they started to write more stories that portrayed their real life experiences as human beings with full lives. That was also accelerated in the 80s because there was obviously the AIDS pandemic, which galvanized queer people artistically and in community.
Yeah.
And in the 90s, people started to tell stories to keep the people that were dying around them alive and to show gay people in their entirety, not as angels and not as villains, but as just people with full problematic lives rather than just numbers. In the darkest time there was to be a gay person, right? We experienced a queer cinematic euphoria like never before in the 80s and the 90s.
Wow.
It is beautiful, isn't it? I mean, it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
And even those are still, like, really problematic, I think. So that was the journey of gays through cinema. But it brings me to the question. Why are queer people so cool now in the movies?
Interesting.
And why are we seemingly in so many TV shows and films? Because in recent years, queer representation has skyrocketed, right? And sometimes it's done extremely well. But considering the history, it's such a big shift.
Yeah.
I remember going to the cinema to see the first lesbian film I'd ever known to be played in the cinema, Blue is the Warmest Colour. And I was 19. And I weren't with my girlfriend at the time. And I was, it was amazing.
Really?
And, like, now I watch that film and the sex scene's really problematic and the actresses had a really bad time in it and... It's so, like, fetishizey, but just watching it was incredible. But, like, the shift from then to now, like, even the last 5 years is quite incredible because, like, I think you... I've never seen this much queer content coming out of cinema and film and TV. And it's just... Yeah, it just made me wonder what happened.
Well, I think it's social media.
You always think everything's social media.
I always think everything is social media, but... I just think if, you know, before when it was so, it's like stop and start, gay representation was in, out, shake it all about, you know, it was coded, it was it's an innuendo, whereas now the social discourse of the representation of the culture and the people is literally on the phones. People create their own content. Back then, gay people existed, but they just didn't have a means of information and sharing who they were.
That's true.
Whereas now, people are like, I'm here, I exist, deal with it. And from that, not only do those people that make the content then make films, but there are more stories out there because it's a larger scale. Gallup poll recently just suggested that Gen Z is 15.9% identify as LGBTQ+, which is huge. And you have to think, is cinema a reflection of society or is society a reflection of cinema?
What do you mean?
So, are the writers of cinema writing about themselves? Yeah. Or is society being a mirror to what they see on the screen?
Are we becoming gay because of the films?
Pardon?
Are you suggesting we're becoming more gay because the films are more gay?
We it's this, there's a whole theory. I think it's called the hypodermic needle theory. I learned about it in uni. I might be wrong there. Whereas, basically, are we a mirror of the media that's out there, or is the mirror perpetuating us?
I think it's both, right? It's like a it's like a symbiotic system.
Yeah.
But
I think social media makes that voice louder.
Okay. But what... So this is my question.
Uh-huh.
Is it kind of a little bit too late to the party that queer becomes the big cool thing? Because queerness has historically been anti-establishment.
Mm-hmm.
It's been radical.
Yeah.
However, now that is just something you can market and something you can buy and sell. Mm. And it just made me think, watching all these movies and watching all these dynamic ways that filmmakers and actors found to like push their gay agenda through the screen into the viewer's eyes, right?
Yeah.
And now it's like almost people are begging you for it because it's something that can be sort of commodified by producers that earn a lot of money.
Yeah. And you could argue as well that LGBT people, like, it's, I don't want to say it, it's a brand.
It's becoming a brand.
It's becoming a brand.
So it made me think, right? We see ourselves in advertisements and in Netflix series and in blockbuster movies. Mm-hmm. But is that just because representation has become a profitable buzzword? And is it okay for Hollywood and media companies to profit from the lives of queer people and the stories of queer people? Shouldn't we have ownership over our own stories, and shouldn't we have queer voices in control of everything creatively?
Because it's like queer creatives, me and you, want to just make content for people that are like-minded to us,
mm-hmm.
and make art and teach people. But we can't do what we do without being somewhat of a brand,
mm-hmm.
and conforming to that sort of capitalist structure.
It's mad, isn't it?
It is, and it's quite scary.
Mm-hmm. Because you can see it, I think.
Yeah.
You can see in the way that so many films betray queer characters. Because they usually the characters are white, and they are attractive, and they are thin. Mm. And they don't bring in this huge spectrum of queer people that you see
changing.
In the clubs.
I think that's massively changing.
Maybe, and I hope it is, you know what I mean? I hope it is, and maybe that's because there's more queer voices in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because we're winning, right? But
I think people know that. I think people know that the queer community isn't just white, skinny, cis
mm-hmm.
people. And I think that the real media that people, you know, so that Pink Pound that is so profitable.
What's that?
So Pink Pound, it's like the money. So queer people would watch cinema about themselves. So they go to the cinema and pay money to watch it. Netflix see a huge rise in sex education series because it has an absolute vast range of characters,
mm-hmm.
and so some of them are queer on there. You know, Heartstopper, absolute blockbuster, incredibly successful. There's loads of queer stuff, and because people want to see themselves, so then they watch themselves, then it gets money. Pink Pound.
But yeah, it's interesting, and I think you're right. Like, it's not there's not a final answer here. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I think people, we all need to be wary of, like, when we become fashionable and when we become unfashionable. And it's like, Hollywood will jump on you now,
mm-hmm.
in a way that it might not later, you know? And these things move in waves. And queer people need to be a part of the process at all times. And we've
got to keep being loud.
Yeah, and we've got to start trying to own our own shit.
Mm.
So that's all my point is.
Yeah.
It's a great leap forward, but how much of it is people piggybacking off your identity?
Wow, interesting stuff, Hess. Hester, did you know that in old Hollywood there were many queer actors that had to conceal their sexuality?
I have my suspicions.
Mm-hmm. Let's end on looking at some of the queer actors that had to conceal their sexuality in old Hollywood.
Fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited.
For many of these people, we can't confirm their sexuality, as unfortunately they were never actually true to be themselves. Due to the very career-ending scandals at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the nature of the homophobic societal views and the Hays Code. So forth and so forth. But, Heather, that doesn't mean it didn't go on. Let's start off with Cary Grant. Heard of Cary Grant?
I have.
Heard of Cary Grant. He rose to the stardom in the 1930s. He was a British-American actor.
He's from Bristol.
He's from Bristol?
Yeah.
Oh,
he ran away with the circus.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Cary, yeah, I've heard, yeah. Heard about that. He was in North by Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really famous one that I remembered him from, along many, many more films. And he was an absolute ladies' man. He married 5 times to women. But in recent years, new information has come out about his personal life. And apparently he lived with fellow actor Randolph Scott.
Oh.
For a number of years.
Good roommates.
Good flatmates. And rumours had long, like, circulated about their queer love. But notably, Grant had an actual long-term relationship spanning 3 decades with Australian costume designer Ori Kelly. So there was a documentary about Ori Kelly's life, and he had a memoir as well, which is based off. So it paints Cary Grant as a former sort of star of all the talents, so singing and acting.
A triple threat.
A triple threat, so some would say. But he had to repress his sexuality for his career.
Hot diggity damn.
I know.
What a waste.
Joan Crawford. Heard of her?
How have I heard of her?
Had an absolute...
My caramba.
She had a reputation of being somewhat of a man-eater, but was actually thought to be bisexual. In the years since her death, it was reported that she had affairs with Barbara Stanwyck, Marilyn Monroe, Martha Ray, and an unknown actress called Marion Morgan. She was part of the Sewing Circle. Have you heard of the Sewing Circle?
I have.
The Sewing Circle's great, isn't
Very
it?
Very exciting.
Very exciting.
I'd like to find a sewing circle of my own.
So the Sewing Circle was first used by Alla Nazimova, and it referred to a group of women who weren't just sewing clothes with their tiny threads.
We weren't doing that at all, were
we? No, they were actually having lesbian experiences in the film industry.
Holy gushmoly.
And the Sewing Circle was made up of Hollywood women who were either bisexual, committed to lesbianism, or just visiting. Something I wish I'd been a part of, Hess.
Me too, you, me too.
Next, we have Rock Hudson. Heard of Rock Hudson?
I have not. Never even met a man called Rock.
He was an absolute heartthrob and an incredible actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the most iconic gay celebrities from Hollywood at that time. Thanks to his agent, Harry Wilson, Hudson's homosexuality was kept very secret for most of his life, and his relationships were kept out of the public eye. But when Confidential magazine threatened to expose his sexuality, his career took a backseat. And this happened quite a lot.
Oh, the press.
Mm-hmm.
The tabloids.
Yeah. And soon after the Confidential incident, Rock married Phyllis Gates to keep any rumours at bay. The marriage didn't last long, as his wife was well aware of his sexuality. And the two eventually parted ways. And then in 1962, Rock met a stockbroker called Lee Garlington and had a lengthy, intimate relationship.
Good for Rock.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, Hester, in 1948, Rock was diagnosed with HIV.
Oh.
And although his agent tried to keep it quiet, the news eventually came out, and he was one of the first known celebrities with the illness.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And a year later, he sadly died.
Oh, so devastating.
Really is.
The amount of artists that were lost is just... I know. Always gets you.
What really gets me about this guy is he just was just constant... Can you imagine the fear that you would have constantly being on the edge of being exposed, and anyone would get your hands on your story?
Mm.
You wouldn't trust anyone.
No, and then also, like, that happening while you're sick... And then your sickness being used to expose you. Like, awful. That's so painful.
Awful. Trauma.
Horrible.
Absolutely horrible. It's actually why back then that gay people were said to be easily persuaded, because they could easily be blackmailed, saying, I'll sell your story to the press. Unless you do this for me. Very common. Ramon Navarro. Have you heard of Ramon Navarro?
No.
I should say, this story is a bit of a trigger warning because it is a lot of violence. Terrible what happened to Ramon.
Oh.
So, he was a star of the silent film era. Mm. He was handsome, enthusiastic, and a very good actor. And he fit into Hollywood like a glove. But behind the glitz and the glamour of the film, Ramon was struggling to conceal his love for men with his Catholic upbringing and turned to alcohol as a way of coping. Unable to come to terms with his sexuality, he took to hiring hustlers in secret to cure his loneliness. Really sad. And in the late 60s, Ramon's life met a very brutal end when he paid two brothers to meet him. One was underage, one was 17, and he took them to his home. And apparently the brothers reportedly tortured and killed Ramon because they were looking to rob him of his music room, which cost, at the time, $5,000.
Oh, man.
From what I remember, they didn't take the music room. They just
killed him.
Just killed him. And they were then convicted, imprisoned, but then paroled. So they got out of prison quite soon. And I was reading about the court case, and the lawyer was saying stuff like, well, his queerness, his homosexuality is a reason for his death.
Well, yeah, that's what used to happen.
Yeah.
If people were murdered for being gay, it was kind of understood.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Think about why these boys went to that place in the first place. Mm. It's just awful. You can just... This guy didn't have it bloody good.
No.
So, sad story about that one.
Sorry, Ramon.
Next up, we got James Dean. Heard of James Dean?
Have I heard of James Dean?
Multiple claims of his homosexuality from James Dean at the height of his career. And in 2016, a book called James Dean, Tomorrow Never Comes, alleged that Dean had a secret relationship with his fellow heartthrob, Marlon Brando. Do you know him?
Do I know Marlon Brando? Yeah, I know who Marlon Brando is ever.
Marlon Brando was the other half of James Dean's alleged secret relationship. And Marlon was openly bisexual.
Yeah, he was.
So in 1976, Marlon said to a French journalist, "Homosexuality is so much in fashion, it no longer makes sense." Then he confirmed that, like a large number of men, I too had an homosexual experience and I am not ashamed of it. Although open about his sexuality, he never confirmed the claims about his relationship with James Dean.
Mm.
So that's, you know.
So we don't know.
Katharine Hepburn.
Heard of her? Oh, yeah.
The iconic Hollywood actress.
Sexy woman.
Academy Award-winning performer in films such as Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, The Lion in Winter, and On Golden Pond, yada, 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 many, many more to come. Not to come. Have been. Katharine Hepburn reportedly had an insatiable appetite for women. According to former pimp and full-service author Scotty Bowers, who basically was a guy who ran, like, the sex lives of Hollywood.
He big gossip of Hollywood.
Yeah. So there's a guy, I can't remember in the life of me what his name is, but he was outside a service station in Hollywood, Scotty Bowers, and a famous American actor came up to him and asked for a blowjob. And asked for a sexual act. To which Scotty, I can't remember if Scotty said yes or no, but then he realised at this gas service station that he could start a bit of a business and help these Hollywood stars have gay experiences.
Ah, he was like...
He was like a pimp.
Setting them all up.
A pimp, yeah, he was. He claimed that Katharine Hepburn's requests went something a bit like this. "When you get a chance, do you think you could find a nice, young, dark-haired girl for me? Someone that's not heavily made up?" And over the course of 5 decades... Bowers and Hepburn became good friends, and Bowers claimed to have procured over 150 different women.
For Catherine?
Yeah.
Hey, she didn't hang about, did she? No. I would have gone, to be fair, if Catherine Hepburn asked me to head down to the old dressing room.
And
I would have said, "Absolutely. Honey, my boots are already on."
Apparently, Katharine was quite fickle, though. So she would see these women once or twice and then never again.
Well, that's how you fit 150 in, to be fair.
But despite this, Hepburn Studio pushed the narrative that her and her fellow co-star, Spencer Tracy, who also was allegedly homosexual, marry and get in a relationship.
Couple of beards
together, according to this account. But instead, it was just a very solid friendship.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
It always is.
Anthony Perkins, you know this guy?
I don't know this one.
You do know this one, because he played Norman Bates in Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Psycho.
Yeah.
Great film. Well, no, actually, not a great film.
Don't like it.
It's an interesting film. It's problematic. And he was nominated for an Academy Awards for his role in The Friendly Persuasion. He was intense, sensitive, and complex, according to Scotty Bowers, our good old full-service pimp. Anthony was married with two kids, but he was also said to be bisexual. His longest gay relationship was with actor Tab Hunter. But apparently he saw many men.
Go on, Anthony.
Marlene Dietrich. A product of the art-centric Weimar culture in the early 20th century Germany, she lived freely, fearlessly, and was well known for her sexuality and masculine dress sense. She regularly donned pants and tucks on the silver screen at a time when it was unfashionable to do so, and it changed the way women were thought about pants forever.
Wow, and now I think about pants all the time.
Greta Garbo. Once considered the most beautiful woman in the world, Greta Garbo was legendary for her expressive face, her need for privacy, and her sexuality. Garbo's life had passionate relationships mostly with women.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Basically, she wrote a bunch of love letters to a lot of women.
I know that.
So, many actors' sexualities were exposed through leaked information and in Confidential, the magazine I spoke about, which was a magazine, and it was founded by Robert Harrison and is considered a pioneer in scandal, gossip, and expose journalism. It was all the rage back then to have sexuality scandals, which would often ruin the career of many individuals. But I can't help but be thankful that many of Hollywood actors now are kind of free to love who they love. Of course, scandals are still a hot topic. In mainstream media, but at least now homosexuality is met with positivity.
Yeah, so you get support
rather than Jesus, oh my god.
Yeah.
But if there are any Hollywood actors out there that are still hiding, that are watching this right now, we love you whether you're in or out of the closet, and it's your decision of even if you want to come out of the closet. So yeah, that's what I've got to say about it.
Well, thank you for that, Emma. Mm-hmm. That is a walkthrough of the people that could have been a bit more bendy than first thought of. Mind you, my dad used to tell me all of the gay Hollywood actors when he'd make me watch all movies, and he'd say, he is gay, he is gay, he's gay. I think a lot of people knew.
Yeah. I just hate that they were lived so much in fear.
Yeah, it sucks. Mm-hmm. But times are changing, and Hollywood's changing, the world's changing. Mm-hmm. It's been a long journey.
It has indeed.
Since 1933 and that League of Bloody Decency.
And it's been a long journey in this podcast. I'm very ready to end it.
Me too. I'm very warm.
It's so hot.
It's so hot. Well, thank you for listening to us. That's been Safe Space. I've been Hester Morris, and this has been
Emma Jackson.
Okay, ciao.